Hello, I'm Gian, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 9th of October 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Gian, Christine, Angela, Liz, Ian, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Flatback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update with Helen. We have the quiz with Mina, from the iconic Wren's Nest to championing our region's best. We have some more fascinating news for the Black Country. An October with a difference in Flashback Roger's Do You Know section. We have all the reaction to this week's football action, West Brom and Wolves. Can we afford to put our wellies and brollies aside this week? We hear from Mina, who has the weather forecast for the week ahead. And you may want to check your pockets and money boxes for this one, as we have a feature focusing on our humble heptagonal friend, the 50 pence piece, which may be worth a lot more than you think, along with a few clever sight loss tips to help with recognising money. Up first, though, it's some local news with Christine, Ian, Liz, Helen. First, Angela.
You may recall a couple of weeks ago, we provided information about the new Midland Metropolitan Hospital. Well, the Black Country's new super hospital finally opened its doors to patients and staff over the weekend, after being fraught with difficulties during its building. Plans for the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital go back as far as January 2011, when the Sandwell and West Birmingham Hospitals NHS Trust was granted a compulsory purchase order to buy the land at Grove Lane, which had previously been used for industrial purposes by GKN. The original cost was forecast to be £297 million, with £100 million provided by HM Treasury and the remainder privately financed. Work on the site started in January 2016, but Wolverhampton-based contractors Carillion went into liquidation in January 2018, causing the PFI contract to be terminated. The estimated cost of finishing the project is now closer to £1 billion. But that was all forgotten on Sunday, as the much-vaunted project finally opened to the public. So, here's all you need to know about the region's new super hospital.
Operated by Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, it is one of the biggest hospitals to open in the UK in 10 years. It occupies 16 acres or 6.5 hectares. The Trust employs 8,000 people and spends around £430 million of public money. They and the Clinical Commissioning Group is responsible for the care of 530,000 people, including the whole of Sandwell and large areas of northwest Birmingham. Regeneration in the area will include affordable new homes on the former City Hospital site and redevelopment of what is known as the Smethwick to Birmingham corridor. The hospital boasts 736 beds, half of which will be set in single ensuite rooms, as well as an emergency department, a dedicated children's A&E and assessment unit, separate adult and children wards. It will feature a total of 11 operating theatres for both emergency, major planned and maternity surgery. It also boasts dedicated patient experience developments, including a winter garden and outdoor spaces to help patients stay active, a two-way talk system so patients can directly connect with nurses in emergencies, and separate corridors and lifts for patients so they can move around the hospital with ease. Two midwife-led birthing unit maternity wards will be on site with 15 delivery rooms. Antenatal services, a neonatal unit, same-day emergency care for adults, and a sickle cell and a thalassemia centre treating blood conditions will also be on site. The building will have energy-efficient lighting, solar panels and combined heat and power systems in an effort to reduce carbon emissions and energy costs, among other initiatives. It also features floor-to-ceiling windows with the aim to allow natural daylight to help create a calming and friendly environment that will positively impact patient and staff physical and mental well-being. The hospital will have a range of transport options to access it, with clearly marked pedestrian and cycle entrances across the site. Ample parking and public transport options will be available. There will also be a number of electric vehicle charging points and a large number of secure cycle storage facilities. Also on site will be a dedicated retail area with visitors and patients able to take advantage of high street brands such as Greggs and M&S.
The A&E department will replace that of the nearby Sandwell Hospital, which will still be open for outpatients, and that of the ageing City Hospital, with part of that site on Dudley Road earmarked for affordable housing. Sandwell Hospital will change its name to Sandwell Health Campus, and City Hospital to City Health Campus. Both of these sites will continue to provide high-quality healthcare services, providing a range of outpatient, day case and diagnostic services. The Birmingham and Midland Eye Centre will remain on site at the City Health Campus. Rowley Regis Hospital and Leezo's Intermediate Care Centre will remain as they are, offering rehabilitation and intermediate care. The Sandwell Health Campus will provide significant extra outpatient and day case surgical capacity for the population of the Black Country in the future. Now then, getting dental care. What's your experience? Well, Healthwatch Dudley have produced a short survey for residents of the borough to tell the NHS what it's like for you to access dental care in the region. With more information about this, let's head over to Helen.
Getting dental care, what's your experience? Well, Healthwatch Dudley are asking if you can fill out a short survey to tell the NHS what it's like for you to get dental care. Figures show that only 78% of people in the Black Country who tried to get a dental appointment in the last 2 years were able to get one. So, Healthwatch Dudley want to hear from you to discover the stories behind these numbers and see what potential solutions could help you get the dental care you need. To find out more, head to the website www.healthwatchdudley.co.uk.
And here's a little reminder that eligible people in the Black Country can now get free flu and COVID-19 vaccinations. Similar to last year, those eligible for a free COVID-19 and flu vaccination include all adults aged 65 years and over, people who live in a care home for older adults, people aged 6 months to 64 years with health conditions that make them more vulnerable, frontline health and social care staff, including those working in care homes for older adults and pregnant women. Eligible people can get one or both vaccinations and are invited to book an appointment via the NHS website, on the NHS app, or by calling 119. Community pop-up clinics offering both vaccines without an appointment are also being hosted at a range of locations across Wolverhampton, including Sainsbury's Bentley Bridge, Thursday 17th of October and Thursday the 31st of October from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., Queen Square, Wolverhampton, on Friday the 11th of October Friday 18th of October and Friday 25th of October from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Park Village Education Centre, Cannock Road, on Saturday the 19th of October from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Bilston Market on Monday 14th of October, Monday 21st of October and Monday 28th of October from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sainsbury's Raglan Street, Wolverhampton, on Thursday 10th of October and Thursday 24th of October from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Anyone not eligible for a free flu vaccination is reminded that they can get it for a small charge at participating pharmacists. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for the NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board, said, "It's vital that everyone prepares for potential winter illnesses, especially those who are at higher risk. It can be easy to become complacent. However, it's important for those who are eligible to top up their protection, even if they have had a vaccine or been ill with flu or COVID-19 before, as immunity fades over time and these viruses change over years. Vaccines remain our best defence, keeping people from developing serious illnesses and helping to minimise hospitalisations during busy winter months. So I would encourage anyone who receives an invite for either vaccine to please get booked in as soon as possible."
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon back with your weekly update and welcome to October. Now, first up this week, did you know that it's recently been Gift Aid Awareness Day? When you tick the box to Gift Aid, you help us do so much more. By donating with Gift Aid, the government adds 25% to your donation at no extra cost to you. Whether you're donating items to our stores or donating to our charity, every bit helps us make a bigger impact. It's a simple way to boost your contribution and support our cause. Thank you for making a difference. Now, next this week, as I say, we're now in October, so get ready for an action-packed October with Beacon's Community Activity Programme. From tandem cycling to book club, walks in West Park to pop-up cinema screenings, there is something for everyone this month. You can even join us for multi-sports with the Wolves Foundation or improve your fitness with one of our chair-based exercise or swimming sessions. To find out more, you can head to our website www.beaconvision.org or give us a call on 01902 880 111. Now, next this week, we'd like to say a huge thank you to the Straits Primary School and all the other wonderful organisations who have been supporting our Bright for Sight event. On Thursday, October the 12th, it's our Bright for Sight Day, where we encourage people to put on their brightest outfits and make a donation for Beacon. It helps show that bright colours and colour contrast can help people really make the most of their sight. Thank you for your support with the event. Now, last this week, helping you get online, Beacon's digital support service helps people with sight loss to navigate technology and stay connected. We can show you how to make the most of any devices that you may have. We provide hundreds of hours of support each year to complete beginners through to those who are just looking to get the latest tech update. So if you'd like to get online with Beacon, give us a call. I'll give you the number again. It's 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org to find out more. This project is partly funded by the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. That's it for this week. I'll be back again soon with another update. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
You may remember in last week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, an article detailing how City of Wolverhampton Council have raised almost £4.2 million in fines from bus lane cameras. Well, this week, Wolverhampton Council has defended its use. In response to a query from Councillor Paul Singh, Cabinet Member for Transport, Councillor Quaiser Azim revealed that fixed penalties for driving in bus lanes had generated revenue of just under £4.2 million during the period from April 2020 to August 2024. Councillor Singh raised questions about the clarity of road signs and markings. But a spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said the design of signs and marking was subject to government regulation. The signs are regularly monitored and must conform to legislation, which specifies design and location. Deviating from these regulations or using additional signs could lead to confusion among road users, resulting in more offences and compromising enforcement, he said. He added that legislation required the council to use any income generated to cover enforcement costs and road improvements. This currently only covers the operational service cost of bus lane and parking enforcement, he said. Motorists who breach the rules are issued with a £70 fine, although this is reduced to £30 if the fine is paid within 21 days. Councillor Azim said bus lanes support the council's statutory duty to secure the safe and efficient movement of traffic. Prioritising bus movements helps to deliver consistent journey times, particularly at peak traffic periods. This in turn encourages the use of buses as a sustainable mode of transport. To deter illegal use of bus lanes, there is clear signage at the start and throughout the length of all bus lanes, advertising the operational days and hours, along with road markings to advise road users.
Now, all these road signs and markings for bus lanes and other vital signage requires maintenance. But if asked, would you know who keeps your street sign looking pristine clean? You'd think it would be the local authority. Well, think again. As a window cleaner who has been cleaning Wolverhampton's street signs voluntarily has said, it keeps me happy just keeping the place clean. Owen James has been doing it for the past 2 years and posts photos of the results on social media. He said he had had loads of comments from people thanking him for his efforts and that it's a great feeling to get the recognition. Mr. James said he had not spoken to the local authority about his work, but added, "We're happy doing our bit for the community." He uses chemicals to remove algae on the signs and said it annoyed him to see them dirty. "No one else wants to do it, so someone's got to," he said. The City of Wolverhampton Council has been approached for comment.
Continuing the theme of championing the actions of our Black Country folk, a cyclist has been helping police catch hundreds of bad drivers by sending officers countless video clips recorded from cameras on his bike. The action by Tim, a cycling instructor from the region, has resulted in scores of motorists receiving notices of intended prosecution from West Midlands Police. "I came back from one bike ride and said, I've had enough, there's something we have got to do about this." Police forces in England and Wales have revealed the public is sending them 150,000 clips every year, with an estimated 90% resulting in drivers being sanctioned. The increase in the amount of footage filmed on helmet cameras, dash cams and mobile phones is leading to more prosecutions for dangerous driving. Tim said he had been sending footage to West Midlands Police for about 3 years, which has led to the force setting up a portal external so more members of the public can submit their videos. Sergeant Stephen Evans of West Midlands Police says the dramatic rise in video clips being shot is increasing awareness of how poor driving standards are in the region. He said at one point he would only experience a couple of close passes by car in a year, but this is increased to 2 or 3 per journey. "As a cyclist, you're always having to move out of the way, and when a vehicle's too close, it can strike you," he said. "I've been hit several times. Cars have actually hit me. When I was younger, I broke my leg and went to hospital." As a reflection of the growing problem, in 2017, West Midlands Police were sent 208 clips. This year, they have already received more than 11,000. Tim said all his videos had resulted in police action. Most often the penalty is an education course, he said. I think that's the most appropriate thing. Everyone has a chance to make a mistake and to learn. But for a second offence, it would be a fixed penalty notice, points on your licence and a fine. The force's Operation Snap encourages people to send in footage of drivers or motorcyclists using a mobile phone, not wearing a seatbelt, failing to stop at a red light and crossing white lines. I think people are getting more aware of the poor standards of driving in the West Midlands area, and people know that there's a place they can report it to and the police will take action, said Sergeant Stephen Evans.
And after dedicating more than 50 years to football, an 87-year-old referee from the Black Country has announced his retirement. Harry Worrell, 87, from East Park, Wolverhampton, first put on his referee shirt after being asked to officiate for his local team, Star Aluminium FC, in Bridge North in 1966. The team, which was started by the Bridge North-based metals group Star Aluminium, was made up of players from the factory floor. By the late 90s, even competed in the West Midlands Premier League division. Now, Harry has announced his grand retirement from the sport, ending a career that saw him moderate matches all over the world, even refereeing a match which starred a young Wayne Rooney. Talking about his career, Harry said, "They were just asking for referees and I thought I would give it a go. I was actually quite late into it. I started when I was 28. If I had started a lot earlier in my youth, I think I would have taken it a lot further, but it's been an amazing career. I actually had a footballer say to me that I should have gone all the way with it, but Father Time just caught up with me, sadly. It just felt like it was time to hang up the boots." Harry's career has seen him officiate matches all over the world for dozens of teams, including Wolverhampton Wanderers, Liverpool, and even USA and Mexico. He said, "My favourite moment was the Coca-Cola tournament at Wembley. That was really a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I enjoyed every minute of it. I even got to meet a really young Wayne Rooney when I refereed an English schoolboys match between Wolverhampton and Liverpool. I remember him being a good player. I met Wolves' Steve Bull, Nottingham Forest's Brian Clough. I really have enjoyed every second of it." Harry is officially retiring after more than 50 years in the role, although he is still planning on officiating some matches in his spare time. While Harry might be officially retiring from his career, he isn't retiring from the sport, as he said referees are needed more than ever. Harry said, "I'm officially retiring, but I'm still getting calls to come to some matches. There just aren't enough referees out there these days. I'm actually covering a match on Saturday. Officially I'm retired, but unofficially I'll most likely keep going as long as my legs will carry me."
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. What year was America's Statue of Liberty dedicated? Question 2. What should we do on the first Friday of October each year? Question 3. What was the Anglo-Saxon word for October? Question 4. In Saxon times, what was traditionally made in October? Question 5. In what year did McDonald's open its first restaurant? And finally, question 6. asks, where are church bells traditionally rung on October the 7th every year? I will be back with you later in the show to answer all your questions, but for now, best of luck!
Thanks for those, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them right now. Up next, however, let's have another block of local news.
Now staying with nostalgia, do you remember when the 50p first came into circulation? First introduced to United Kingdom coinage in 1969, the 50p coin has become an iconic piece of British history. Today, the 50p is used to commemorate historical occasions and has inspired many to start collecting, with the coin often credited as the gateway coin to starting a collection. The third coin issued as part of the decimalisation programme, the 50p coin has featured four definitive portraits of Queen Elizabeth II from its inception up until her passing in 2022. The preparation for the decimalisation was well underway when the first 50p coin was introduced to the UK. Designs for a coin to replace the 10 shilling note were considered by the Royal Mint Advisory Committee throughout 1967 and 1968. The notes by this point were only lasting for approximately 5 months at a time in circulation, and it was thought that a coin which could last up to 50 years would be a better choice. After much consultation, the 50p coin was created, becoming the first seven-sided equilateral curve heptagonal coin in the world. The new coin needed to be easily distinguishable from other coins in a person's pocket, and it also needed to roll easily in vending machines, which were starting to rise in popularity. The 50p coin faced some adversity from the general public when it was first released, with some even creating an anti-heptagonistic movement to oppose it. Members of the public at first felt that the coin was too similar to the new 10p. However, people soon became used to the new shape. It was then replaced by a smaller 50p in 1997, with the older, larger coin becoming demonetized in 1998. And just last week, a rare commemorative 2012 London Olympic Games coin inspired a mini bidding war on the online marketplace eBay before selling for a staggering 8,000 times its face value at £4,000 last week. I think I'll encourage us all to press pause on this edition and take five to check if we have a small fortune lying around.
Welcome back. Any joy? Feeling minted? Nope, me neither. Well, the Royal Mint went on to explain more about the 2012 London Olympics swimming 50p coin and why it's so highly valued. The design was created by Jonathan Olive, and it depicts a swimmer in action with fluid lines struck into the metal representing the waves. In the rare first design, these lines covered the swimmer's face. Soon after its release, the coin was tweaked to make the face more visible, but not before the first design made it out into the world. One of the most exciting aspects of this special 50p is that no one knows exactly how many entered circulation before the changes were made, only that numbers were extremely limited. This is often the case with error coins, and they immediately become a collectible piece. Few have ever been sold, and many take pride of place in private collections, but there's always a chance this valuable coin could find its way to you. Being able to independently recognise money is crucial to independence. It enables visually impaired people to shop independently, securely, and efficiently. While many businesses take alternative payment methods, such as debit card and even bank transfer in certain situations, some businesses still prefer cash, and this is when being able to successfully recognise money is essential. Many visually impaired people admit to handing over their wallets to shop assistants or asking a stranger for help with their PIN number at a cash point, both of which can be dangerous and reduce independence. So, here are some top tips from some leading sight loss charities to help manage money with confidence.
Identifying coins. Coins can be distinguished by rubbing your fingernail over the edge of the coin. In the UK, they are in pairs. The contrast in size in each pair, as well as the different edges and colours of the metals, make it easier for blind or partially sighted people to identify the coins. Here are a few tips. 1p with 2p. Have a smooth edge, the 1p being smaller and the 2p being the larger coin, made with a copper-coloured metal. 5p with 10p. Have a rough edge, the 5p being smaller and the 10p being the larger coin, made of nickel, a silver colour. 20p with 50p. Have an angular edge, the 20p being smaller and the 50p being the larger coin, made of nickel, a silver colour. £1 with £2. Much thicker edges than the other coins, the £1 being smaller and the £2 being the larger coin, made with a gold and a silver coloured metal.
Learn how to recognise banknotes. As of the 20th of February 2020, polymer £5, £10 and £20 banknotes have been in circulation, with a polymer £50 banknote released in 2021. Like the old paper banknotes, they are different sizes. However, the polymer banknotes have an additional tactile feature so that visually impaired people can distinguish between the different notes without any aids or support, and without the need to be organised before going out. The clusters of raised dots are square-shaped, with four dots in each square. For those who are familiar with Braille, the dots form the same shape as a Braille letter G. The Bank of England acknowledges that the purpose of the tactile feature is to help visually impaired people identify each banknote, highlighting that they were considered throughout the design process. The new banknote design allows visually impaired people to manage cash more efficiently and spontaneously. It is a great example of how such a vital product can go from being partially accessible to very accessible through a simple design tweak. £5. The £5 note does not have any tactile feature. However, it is the only polymer banknote in circulation that does not have any tactile feature. So the absence of the tactile feature indicates its £5 denomination. £10. The £10 polymer banknote features two clusters of raised dots. £20. The £20 polymer banknote features three clusters of raised dots. And if you've been lucky enough to have a few £50 notes in your wallet, you'll know the £50 polymer banknote features four clusters of raised dots.
Some other useful tips. Look out for audio cash machines. Most cash machines in the UK are now audio cash points with a port for headphones. The keypads should also have a raised dot on the number 5, which helps to navigate the numbers when using it. You can find nearby audio ATMs using the app Link ATM Locator, a free app that identifies your closest ATM and lets you know whether it has an audio feature. Try image recognition technology. There are lots of applications, apps, that use AI, artificial intelligence, to narrate the world around you. Examples of which are Microsoft's Seeing AI and Google's Google Lookout. Both apps are free to download from the App Store on your smartphone and/or tablet. They may be able to help with tasks such as reading handwriting, letters or newspapers, recognising people, identifying food labels or medication boxes, and through the currency mode, identify different banknotes. A low-tech solution is to only carry a single denomination. This would guarantee that you always knew how much you were paying at a checkout in a shop. You can also purchase a banknote detector, a small device which will read your note and vibrate 1 to 4 times, indicating the denomination. Another solution may be to carry a purse or wallet with multiple compartments so that you can store each denomination in a different section of your wallet. However, this involves being organised and preparing before you go out. Up now is another Beacon update.
If you're struggling with reading and need a magnifier, have you ever considered a video magnifier, or sometimes known as a digital magnifier? Well, Beacon have a range of video magnifiers that you can come in and try. Now, a video magnifier, you can increase or decrease the magnification, so you can turn it up a bit or you can turn it up quite a lot to help you read. You can change contrast settings on a video magnifier, so you can look at something in true colour, or you could change the contrast to black on white, or white on black, or yellow on black, or black on yellow. It's whatever works best for you, so there's a range of combinations there that you can try to find the right one. You can also freeze images on a video magnifier. So let's say there's something in your fridge, a piece of some food. You could take a little picture, because the angle's a bit difficult to read of it, and then bring the magnifier away and then zoom it up. So if it's something like the sell-by dates or ingredients on food, you can read it comfortably there. So video magnifiers range from small handheld magnifiers you can sit comfortably in an armchair to read with, up to medium-sized ones, which are about the size of laptops, and then there's desktop magnifiers with big, large 24-inch screens, which really make magnification strong. So, if you would like to try a video magnifier to see if that would help you, you're very welcome to. Just call Beacon's Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. And remember, bring something you struggle to read with you. So if you'd like to try a video magnifier, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a Sight Loss Advisor. 01902 880 111.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
The international importance of a Black Country beauty spot will be the subject of a talk by a popular historian this week. Wren's Nest National Nature Reserve in Dudley will be the subject of Rob Broadbent's talk to Sedgley History Society on October the 10th. His talk, entitled The Jewel in Dudley's Crown, will talk about the geological importance and industrial heritage of the Silurian limestone cliffs, which played a crucial role in the Industrial Revolution. Famed for the Dudley Bug trilobite fossil, Wren's Nest is considered to be one of the most notable geological locations in the British Isles and is visited and studied by geologists from all over the world. The story goes back 400 million years, when the area was covered by coral reefs and tropical seas, providing an environment for the fossils the site is known for today. More than 700 types of fossil are known to have come from Wren's Nest, 186 of which were first discovered there and 86 are found nowhere else on Earth. The first meeting of the Society's new season starts at 7:30 p.m. in St Andrew's Church in Bilston Street, Sedgley. Admission is free for members and £2 for non-members.
From one regional landmark to another, as work has started on site to build an iconic monument to a Black Country steelworks which served the region for more than a century. The 14-foot-high memorial to the former Round Oak Steelworks in Briley Hill has been designed by Dudley Borough artist Steve Field. It will take the form of a ladle suspended in the air pouring molten metal and will go up on green space at the junction of Dudley Road and John Street in the town. The steelworks, built on more than 100 acres of land, was a major employer in the town for nearly 130 years between 1857 and 1982. And, at its peak, 3,000 people were employed at the 50-acre site. But the 1970s saw a big fall in demand and 1,750 jobs were cut in the 3 years prior to closure. Buildings like the main office block in Dudley Road survive to this day, but most of the works was demolished in 1984. The steelworks closed in 1982 and was demolished a few years later, laying the ground for what is now the waterfront. In 1980, the adjacent Merryhill Farm had been declared an enterprise zone by the government in a bid to bring investments into the area and would soon be developed as the Merryhill Shopping Centre. Following Round Oak's closure, the zone was extended to include the steelworks, which became the waterfront office and leisure park. The main parts of the structure were craned onto site last week by fabricator Vince Thompson of Iconoclast Constructs. Stainless steel sheeting is to be added this month to represent the pouring of molten metal, while a footpath around the sculpture will also be created. Council bosses are aiming for a formal unveiling in December to mark the 42nd anniversary of the closure of the steelworks in 1982. The deputy leader of Dudley Council, Councillor Paul Bradley, visited the site on Thursday to see how the works were progressing. He said, "The Round Oak Steelworks are an important part of Briley Hill's history, having employed so many in the town over such a long period of time. It is great to see the main components of the monument in place. The detail on it, and on the ladle in particular, shows Black Country craftsmanship at its best. The monument will sit on a gateway entrance into Briley Hill and will be a great addition to the town. It will also act as a meeting point for local people, including former steelworkers or their relatives, to reflect and remember Round Oak. The structure will be made from the same material used in the iconic Angel of the North statue in the northeast."
And talking about natural beauty of over 100 years in the region, a Wolverhampton woman is staking her claim to be the oldest person in the West Midlands. Born in Somerset 2 months before the World War I armistice in 1918, Dora Green turned 106 on the 18th of September. She said that the secret to her long life was kindness and a breakfast of porridge and prunes. Her daughter contacted the BBC after being told of a news report suggesting that a 105-year-old could be the oldest person in Wolverhampton, a record Mrs. Green was keen to set straight. Mrs. Green was born in Bridgwater. She was educated at St. John's School in Worcester, where she has fond memories of learning to swim in a nearby river. "It was all right back then," Mrs. Green added. Her family moved to Low Hill in Wolverhampton in 1929, where she continued her education at Old Fallings School. She worked in the food office during the Second World War, issuing rations. Then she worked for the post office and Wolverhampton Borough Council in clerical positions. She enjoyed playing the organ and the piano at Springfield's Methodist Church and is a fan of Coronation Street and Emmerdale. Mrs. Green's first husband and father of her children, George White, died in 1974. She then married Bernard Green, and the couple spent their honeymoon in Bournemouth. The pair enjoyed holidaying in Wales and once travelled to the Norwegian fjords. Mrs. Green's grandson, Scott, said he would be his grandmother's page boy so long as he didn't have to wear a silly quilt, meaning a kilt. She has 2 children, 2 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. Her great-great-grandson, Tommy, was born during the COVID lockdown. She was unable to see him for several months, but eventually got to meet him in her garden. "I've only ever been kept in the house by 3 things in my life: snow, World War II, and coronavirus." Mrs. Green is very proud of her 3 birthday cards from the reigning monarch, 2 from King Charles and 1 from Queen Elizabeth. "She was a good un, always smiling," she said of the late Queen. Mrs. Green's daughter, Rosemary, 79, said that her mum was always there to take care of her, even if it took her to unfamiliar places. "When I was 15, I was mad on Adam Faith, and I wanted to go and see him when he came to Wolverhampton. Mum had read about Teddy Boys, and she was worried they might be at the concert, so she said, 'I'm coming with you.' We had a lovely evening." Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. It's all yours, Roger. Take it away.
Well, hello again, everyone. Well, here goes. And my calendar informs me that we have only 11 weeks till Christmas. Eek! But ignore that just for a couple of minutes. Have a listen to some of the bits and pieces I found about this month. So, did you know that? The Statue of Liberty arrived in the United States all the way from France and was dedicated in October 1886. It was given as a gift to celebrate the centenary of the American Revolution and the friendship amongst the two countries. Each of the seven spikes on her crown represent the seven oceans and the seven continents of the world, and it is said it represents the universal concept of unity. And now then, World Smile Day is on the first Friday of October every year. It's a great excuse to have a big smile to your friends and your family, or even your boss. And who knows, it might even get you a pay rise. And the Anglo-Saxons' name for October was Winterfileth, with its name containing the words for winter and full moon respectively. It was named this because winter was said to begin from the first full moon of the month. But the Saxons had their name for October too. Theirs was Winmonath, which translated into wine month because it was the time of the year for making wine. I'm not sure about you, but I think October just became my favourite month. And well, who'd have thought it, but McDonald's opened its first restaurant in the UK in Woolwich, South London in October 1974. Inside was found wooden seats, an ashtray on every table, and some of the cheapest meals or spritz had ever seen about. Ronald's tasty hamburger, which was made of 100% pure beef, topped with pickles, mustard and ketchup, and served in a freshly toasted bun, cost just 15p. That was three bob in those days. And incidentally, that first one is still operating today. And Twyford Church in Hampshire has a tradition of ringing its bells every year on October the 7th. The origin of this tradition goes back to the 18th century, when a local resident called William David became lost in heavy fog while riding home at night. Much to his luck, he heard the church bells toll, and from this, he managed to find his way home. As a form of thanks, he left some money to the church when he died, so that the church could continue to ring their bells on October the 7th every year, just in case there were any other lost travellers. There you go then, your 2 minutes are up, so you can start to think about Christmas. I'd better go and take my own advice and start to write my letter to Santa, although I think these days an email is more appropriate. Mind you, they're not as easy to send up the chimney, that's for sure. In your road up, he ignores most of my requests anyway, but I still live in hope. Till next week then, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, I hope you're all keeping safe and well. It's Mina here, back again with your forecast for the week ahead. And looking at the forecast ahead, it does look as though nothing much has changed, as we've got more sunshine and showers on the way. At the moment, it's looking like there should be plenty of sunny spells later in the week. So this will keep UV levels up at medium for most of it. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:40 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:10 for the sunset. For Friday, 11th of October, it's looking like it shall remain mainly dry across the region, with sunny intervals expected throughout most of the day. But with a moderate breeze coming down from the northwest, temperatures are not going to be up to much and may struggle to even break double digits, with it feeling closer to 7 degrees across the region. So it may just feel a little chilly if you're out and about. Moving on into the weekend, and we should see things return to something much more unsettled on both Saturday 12th and Sunday 13th of October, with light rain and a moderate breeze forecast. With the breeze continuing to drift in from the northwest, there'll still be a chill in the air, with temperatures feeling close to 7 degrees. into next week and we shall start to see a change setting in from Monday 14th of October with a warm front from the southwest beginning to dominate. Temperatures will begin to feel a little milder at around 11 degrees, although we may still see some light rain across the region on Monday. This should begin to clear as we go into Tuesday, leading to a much drier and sunnier spell of weather as we progress through the rest of the week. From Tuesday 15th right through to Thursday 17th of October, it's expected to be very settled, with plenty of sunny spells, helping temperatures feel a lot more pleasant at 12 degrees. So, there we have it. Finally, we may be able to put our brollies and wellies away for a few days at least. Do take care, have a wonderful week and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
It was a weekend that raised more questions than answers, with Saturday bringing about further frustration for the Baggies and yet more concern for the Wolves. There will be Albion fans left scratching their heads with manager Carlos Corberan after watching their stalemate with Millwall. That is understandable as Albion put in a bit of a tepid display despite having so much possession. It was a bit of a throwback to games last season where Albion just didn't have an answer. Things were laboured and they didn't look likely to break through. But for me, the setup of Albion, the style and everything the manager has responsibility for wasn't the reason Albion couldn't break through the Millwall rear guard. In games like this one, where we have seen Albion face such a, in modern football cliche term, a low block, you have to show bravery. Bravery to make passes that come with a risk, but also a reward. You need players who have quality to go and make something happen. But for large parts of this one, Albion did not show that at all. The pace was lethargic. The one period where Albion ramped up the tempo of the game, Alex Mowat and Mikey Johnston were busy. Had a lot of possession in the final third. But when you can't break two massive banks of four, you need to be creative. You need to take responsibility. Have a dig from distance. Go and throw everything at a set piece. When is the last time we saw Albion score from a set piece? It is by no means a bad display compared to the first half at Sheffield Wednesday. Some will see a superb defensive display from Millwall, who came and did a real job on Albion. They did do that. But you need players to take responsibility to make something happen. It is only 2 weeks since we were saying Albion had one of the best squads in the division. Playing two-touch in your own half is a safe thing to do. Grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck and making something happen is the brave thing to do. And they'll have to do it at times this season because other sides will come and do a Millwall. Now, talking of jobs, according to FIFA, the definition of a defender is a player whose primary job is to stop attacks and prevent the opposing team from scoring goals. And I'm not sure there were too many of them present in West London on Saturday, as a disastrous defensive display saw Wolves lose their sixth Premier League game in seven fixtures after a remarkable six-goal first half at Brentford. Nathan Collins headed the bees in front against his old club just over a minute into the game before a swift Mateus Cunha equaliser. But Wolves' defensive errors reared their ugly heads again as Mario Lemina fouled Collins for a penalty, which Brian Mbeumo converted. Wolves managed to drag themselves level again through Jorgen Strand Larsen, but immediately gave away another poor goal as Christian Norgaard finished to put Brentford back ahead again within a minute. Ethan Pinnock headed home Brentford's fourth just before half-time to give Wolves a mountain to climb. Wolves failed to impose themselves in the second half as Fabio Carvalho scored a late fifth. Rayon Aynouri then scored an injury-time consolation for Wolves on a day the travelling fans turned on the team amid a disappointing 5-3 defeat. Let's head over to our Wolves faithful to get their take on this week's action.
Hello, it's Jamie the Wolves fan reporting on Brentford 5, Wolves 3. This week I felt it was quite embarrassing. If he doesn't know he's got to change it, he has to change it now. he should have changed before the Newcastle game because we may have a few more points on the board. Basically, it sounded as if he's lost the away fans. Once you lose the away fans, it is pretty much telling. So he has to change it. If he doesn't change it now, it's time to go, I think. It doesn't remind me of the end of the McCarthy era. It reminds me of the end of the Bruno Lage era, where we had a game against West Ham and it was just an embarrassment. In all kinds of trouble, it's now or never. Possible candidates, I'll probably go for somebody like a David Moyes or a Graham Potter. Yeah, it's pretty much telling. Because we have to start getting wins on the board. Next up is City. Quite an easy game, I think. But, oh well, that's another week without a win. And then it's Brighton away, where we always seem to get caught undone. So if he doesn't change it against City, I think it is time for him to go. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you very much. Bye.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. In what year was America's Statue of Liberty dedicated? And the answer? 1886. Question 2. What should we all do on the first Friday of October each year? And the answer here is smile. It's World Smile Day. Question 3. What was the Anglo-Saxon's word for October? And the answer here is winter fleeth. Question 4. In Saxon times, what was traditionally made in October? And the answer here is wine. Question 5. In what year did McDonald's open its first restaurant? And the answer here is 1974. And finally, question 6. Where are church bells traditionally rung on October the 7th every year? And the answer? Twyford in Hampshire. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!